Colonel Rob Maness has a lifelong record of providing dedicated service to this nation. Having worked his way up from the enlisted ranks to full colonel, he served our country for more than 32 years. He has served as a bomber squadron commander, bomb disposal technician, Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, assisted the National Security Team with the campaign plan for the global war on terrorism. He authored the first theater nuclear war plan and served as the vice commander of America's largest airborne intelligence wing. Colonel Rob Maness is a true American hero. This is Rob Maness Live.
The American people are tired of the arrogance and insolence of Prime Minister Netanyahu telling America what we should do. The entire country of Israel has a GDP that is less than a single town in my district. Yet somehow Netanyahu thinks he could tell the American people what we should do. The person who's most upset with him right now is President Donald Trump. And everyone in America, whether you're a Republican, an independent, or a Democrat, says that we need to tell Netanyahu that America calls the shots, not the prime minister of any other country. They want less cooperation and blank checks to Israel, not more. Only the United States Congress would dream up at this moment, let's actually do more for Israel, not less. And that's what Section 2024 does. It's a pretty simple thing. Should we do more for Israel than we already do, or should we do less? If you think we should do more for Israel, you should be against my amendment. If you think we should do less for Israel at the time that he's arrogantly telling Donald Trump what to do, then you should be for my amendment. Now, let me just be clear. Mr. Netanyahu actually wrote to a member of Congress to put this Section 224 into the bill.
Folks, welcome back to the Rob Maness Show on More War Monday, and we're live on Worldview Tube and X-Space's simulcast. Well, loose lips sink ships, man. That World War II warning still rings true today, except now the danger isn't just enemies listening in. It's loose lips even with our allies. We just watched that chilling clip there from Ro Khanna in the House of Representatives. Israel's prime minister reportedly had a direct hand in writing this Section 224 of this year's National Defense Authorization Act, which does some things that we're going to talk about. Think about that. A foreign leader shaping America's defense authorization? That's not partnership. That's something else. We're going to ask the hard questions today. Should we be merging our industrial base and fusing our intelligence with allies? Or are we handing over the keys to our own house? Well, we'll look at the reports that President Trump is furious with Israel right now and what that tells us about the state of the alliance. And Iran? It's still all about the nukes, folks. The mullahs have never stopped racing for the bomb, and every day that people pretend otherwise is another day that we're playing with fire. President Trump's close on a deal, from what he tells us, even with the nuclear weapons. Well, I should say especially with Iran, and he should be angry that an ally is disrupting that process without coordination. To cut through the noise and give us straight talk from the inside, I'm joined right now by my friend, retired CIA officer, intelligence expert, and publisher of AND magazine, Sam Faddis. So, Sam, welcome back to the show, man. Let's start with the NDAA clip. I mean, that's weird. The prime minister of another country writing stuff to be put into the national security, the national defense authorization?
Yeah, weird is a polite way to put it, sir. unacceptable. I mean, look, you know, the way I always begin talking about Israel is to say, look, this doesn't have anything to do with Zionism or any of the rest of it. Let's just go down to this. Any other country, I don't care what kind of ally they are, any other nation, they're an ally. Okay, our interests coincide sometimes. Sometimes they don't coincide. But in any event, it's not our government. They don't represent the American people. So you don't ever, when it comes to intelligence and defense and this kind of cooperation, you don't ever say, Yeah, I fully trust these people. Show them all our cards, give them complete access. It doesn't work like that. So again, I don't care if it's the Israelis, the Japanese, the French, right? We shouldn't do that. We should also, by the way, keep in mind, I mean, let's be blunt. The Israelis have spied on us and continue to spy on us. Yeah. They continue to recruit assets. I don't mean, let's not mince words. I mean, spy. They recruit sources inside the U.S. government and get them to give them secrets. Jonathan Pollard being the most prominent example. But there are plenty of others, some of whom still are not publicly known. So they steal stuff from us. Not to mention, as you well know, you know, once you hand information to anybody else, you don't actually have control over where it goes and how it's used. You don't know what the Israelis are going to do with it, and you also don't know who is going to steal it from the Israelis. So, you know, once the secret's out in the open, it isn't a secret anymore.
That's true. True. Yeah, I have to also put this out too, Sam. Like you, I am not anti-Zionist. Matter of fact, I've been called a Christian Zionist myself. But this is, I wanted to have you on to talk about this stuff from the national security perspective. Sure. Of two old pros that have dealt with every level of classified information,
right,
in peace and war. I think to you know, talk about why it's not a good idea. One of the things that I was thinking about as I was writing my notes up for this show is that this looks like an end around on the constitutional requirement for ratification of a treaty by 2/3 of the Senate. Is it?
Yeah, well, there's that, where there's that whole component, right? We've just, this doesn't constitute a treaty. I mean, you're basically allowing the Israelis to be completely embedded, as you noted, in our defense industrial base and in special access programs and all the other very, very sensitive programs, like directly embedded. I mean, for folks that don't know how this process typically works, without getting too far down in the weeds, if it's CIA, you want to pass intelligence to the Israelis, which happens all the time, happens every minute. There is still a formal process. There's an intelligence report. Somebody looks at it, decides, are we going to give them the whole thing or a piece of the thing? And what are we going to tell them about where we got it, et cetera, and so forth? And then they literally prepare a separate document, if you will. Obviously, this is all electronic now. Mm-hmm. And that thing in CIA speak, typically referred to as a tear line, is then passed to the Israelis. Okay, everybody has some form of that process. It's like a valve that controls what goes to them and doesn't. Mm-hmm. This Section 224, there is no such thing anymore. They have a pipe directly into all of our most sensitive secrets, and they can pump they see everything to the full extent we do as we see it. No controls. You can't take it back. You can't turn it off.
So it is true that words like integration of our classified digital system, that type of integration is in this Section 224. I mean, it appears, yes, to be to me when I read it.
Yeah, yes, and I have read it. I have gone through everything that's available, the actual markup of the bill and so forth. And, you know, it's not true that the two militaries are being integrated in the sense that the units will somehow be integrated.
Right.
Though some of the press has said that's not true. But all of our most sensitive programs, all of our intelligence, I mean, we are going to fully integrate them if this is passed. So, again, you have some super sensitive project going on at DOD or CIA or NSA. Mm-hmm. These guys will be integrated. I mean, just so people are aware, at one point in my career, I actually was in charge of the Israeli account at headquarters in between field assignments. They were already integrated into a number of things, but very tightly controlled relative to this. I mean, to the point where if you had a project, that project was run out of an outbuilding, not out of headquarters proper, you know, a specific place where everything could be controlled. Again, it's all about compartmentation, right? It's all about control. 224 means you've thrown that out the window.
Yeah, because it enables digital fusion and integration from an automatic perspective, right?
Yes.
Using artificial intelligence.
You've got a giant database and or a AI entity running a project. Well, the Israelis will be fused into it on an equal footing with us. There is no mechanism for control. And then obviously once it is in their hands, first of all, they decide what to do with it. We have no control now. Mm-hmm. But also, again, this is a big problem in intelligence. You know, the Israelis may be good. They also get spied on. So when you give it to the Israelis and the Russians run a tech op on them in Tel Aviv and suck all the data out, well, in other words, we're as fast as the Israelis get it, it may be in the Kremlin or it could be in Beijing. That's the way the world of intel works and why you always have that control.
Yes. So let me make sure I understand it. So, hey, folks, Congress, we're going to just turn the spigot on. On our most secret intelligence and let it go. And we don't really care who's getting it. I mean, is that what I'm hearing here?
Yeah, the technical term for this in intel world is bad. This is a very, very bad idea. This is the kind of thing that somebody pitches to you that had a bright plan. And as soon as they're done talking, all you can think is, well, hardly anything could go wrong with that plan, could it? Like, okay, next bright idea, because we're not doing that, guys. That is not happening at all.
I've talked, and this is another reason why I wanted to do this show with you, because I am not a fan of Five Eyes NATO friends and everything. I've never been a fan of it. It lets information into hands that I think ordinarily if we looked at the information first, somebody would rightfully say, wait a minute, this shouldn't be happening. And unfortunately the way we developed that system, I think we're tamping down a little bit on it now from what I understand in the Trump administration, but we're trying to, but the way we built that system, I've just never been comfortable with that. And the NATO alliance is like the most legally put together, controlled from an American weapon system and production perspective that's on the planet, I think.
Yeah. But look, I'm back to the central point. Anytime you pass any information to another entity, in addition to the fact you lose control over what they will do with it, you lose control over where it goes. If you're going to pass information to a foreign power, and at this point, NATO's a whole bunch of foreign powers, well, the bottom line is you don't know where the hell it went. You may tell them, first of all, their national government can make a decision contrary to yours, but also the Russians and the Chinese and everybody else recruit spies in all of these governments and all of these intel services. So if they see it, it's gone. It's in Beijing. It's in Moscow. And keep in mind the age in which we live. It's not like somebody printed a copy and a courier is carrying it to Beijing.
By horseback.
It is. Camel. Exactly. On a sleigh through the snow. It is real time. I mean, somebody wires into this and real time, as fast as you're seeing it on your computer screen in the Pentagon or wherever, they are also seeing it in Moscow, Beijing, Pyongyang, Tehran, wherever. So terrible, terrible, terrible idea.
Yeah, it is absolutely rotten, in my opinion. And you don't have to agree on everything. You know, I want to go back to the Israel point. Look, I'm going to show a cold open clip of the next segment here in a couple of seconds, and it's going to be from Steve Bannon. And I don't think he and I are totally aligned on everything about what's going on, just like you and I and you and the three of us probably aren't either. But it's important to understand that we have to ferret out the important stuff see where we have alignment. And on this, I think everybody is on the same page. That's why I played the Ro Khanna clip at the beginning of this, because I could even agree with Ro Khanna on this one, which is very, very rare.
not a frequent occurrence, I'm sure.
All right, we'll be right back with Sam Pattis, retired CIA officer. We're talking about the NDAA Section 224.
At a certain age, you stop chasing younger. You start protecting what helps you feel steady, strong, and well. Your body's collagen matters. It supports the structure of your skin, joints, and connective tissue. But as the years go by, your body needs more support from the inside. That's where Bella Grace Elixir comes in. Bella Grace Elixir combines Verisol collagen, the world's most clinically proven collagen, with Astereal astaxanthin and cat's claw in a proprietary blend designed to help support the processes that reconstruct collagen, while also offering antioxidant and anti-inflammatory effects. And this isn't just for women. It's for men and women who want to age with more confidence, more care, and a daily wellness routine that supports the body from within. One simple elixir, thoughtfully formulated for whole body wellness. Take care of the body that has carried you this far. Order Bella Grace Elixir today at melissahousebg.com.
Brandon Weicker's about to blow your head up. Not only are we talking about, and this is a misdirection play, Israel's plenty wealthy enough. Look, they have their own set of strategic interests. And I'm a big supporter of Israel. I'm not a supporter of the Greater Israel Project. That's what's gotten us in this mess. Certainly Netanyahu and the president not only said it, then when Tel Aviv Levin and these guys came out and said, oh, it's a leak. It's all fabricated. It's made up. President Trump goes with Miranda Devine and confirms what he told Netanyahu. Now, this is in a war that President Trump is trying to wrap up. And he got nothing but bad intelligence the entire time on this. History will prove, well, first off, you can see factually right now, but history will prove me correct on this. So saying that, hey, they don't need any more money and they have their own strategic interest, they don't want to be a protectorate, fine. Go do your own thing, but you got to pay for it. And we don't need 10 years, sign another MOU, sign another 10 years, and they know they're getting pressure, so we're going to stop it now. So what happens? You get an end run to merge our industrial bases. And they present, oh, we're going to do trade now. Trade now. We do trade. We do our own thing. And maybe we do joint projects. We do like to do the British. There's no merger. On top of that, Weikert's about to tell you they're trying to merge the intelligence groups. Now, I don't know why they would want to merge it since Mossad runs the deal over the CIA. And this is why Tom Cotton is trying to take DNI and make it just some sort of post office box. This is why they hate Pulte being named over there. Kurt Mills, let's start with FISA. Why do we, if Lindsey, first off, by definition, if Lindsey Graham, Tom Cotton, and Mark Warner, and Tim Kaine, and I can keep going, if the neocon deep state House of Lords representatives want it on any topic, if they want it, we.
Welcome back to the Rob Maida Show here on Worldview Tube. It's More War Monday, and I shouldn't chuckle, but Steve's opening there, the clip there I used for the opening, I'm agreeing with everything he said, with the exception of like 5 seconds worth. But there's just a lot to unpack there. My guest today is retired CIA officer Sam Faddis, who appears on Steve's show. I think even the show that day, Sam was on there. Sam, I don't think people understand. And when I first heard the intelligence integration piece, I missed the part about the defense production base. But when I got to thinking about it, and I'm aware of what's called the black development programs, you know, programs like where the F-117, the B-2, hypersonics, that kind of stuff would come out. So you would have to integrate them in at a place that even I couldn't go. And I've had the highest security clearances, but I had no need to ever be inside of a black program. You know, I mean, you brought up compartmentalization earlier, but this absolutely makes no sense whatsoever when you really start thinking about it, knowing what we know, what you and I know.
Yeah, it's absolutely catastrophic. I mean, I used the term compartmentation before. Mm-hmm. Compartmentation, need to know, these are bedrock principles, right? If I'm in a CIA station running assets on foreign soil, even as a CIA case officer in that station, I am not necessarily aware of all of the operations or all of the assets. In fact, almost certainly in a station of any size, I would not be aware. There's a guy sitting at a desk next to me running assets, and he and I are buds and go drinking on the weekends or whatever, and never discuss. We may discuss some aspects of what we're doing, but not all. There are still things, even within a small station, everybody TS cleared, et cetera, where that level of compartmentation applies, basic principle. All right, so you got big, what the military calls special access programs, developing tech. CIA has its own equivalent. They use different terminology. Those are super compartmented things. The only people that are read in are the people with a need to know, and then even then, only to the extent they have to know. You don't go to CIA and kind of then get to just wander through every room and read every file. It doesn't work like that. So it's crazy, I mean, to the idea that you are going to be developing, say, the cutting-edge tech for the next generation fighter on which the security of our country depends, and a foreign power will be completely, fully integrated into that. See it all. And then take all that tech, do whatever the heck they want to do with it, when they want to do it. And again, when it leaks from them, we suffer the consequences. When they sell it to somebody else, we suffer the consequences. Terrible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if, and I can hear the neocon overlords now, oh, don't worry, we'll still compartmentalize. You know, it's just going to include, in this case, an Israeli that needs to work on the program. But that's not, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
Because you're opening the door.
Doesn't work like that. It is completely predictable. The door is open. You have no control. You're done. It is completely, completely mad. And on the defense industrial end of this, the high tech stuff, you know, bottom line is we depend upon our technological edge at this point to be able to win wars, right? We don't pretend we're going to match up with somebody and put as many men in the field and so forth and so on. Our technology is the ultimate guarantee of our liberty and our independence at this point, and we're constantly advancing it. So we already have, you know, the Chinese stealing everything that's not tied down, and now we're talking about letting another foreign power just see everything as we're developing it. It's a terrible idea. And again, with all respect for the Israelis, they live in a tough neighborhood. They do what they got to do to survive. I never had any problem working with the Israelis because we respected each other, right?
Yeah.
But the bottom line is they're going to do what they have to do to take care of themselves, which is what you would expect. They're not going to say, well, we shouldn't do that because the Americans might not like it, or the Americans might get offended, or the Americans don't want us to. There's not even going to be a moment of that. That's just going to be, wow, we can really use this, and boom. The next thing you know, there's going to be a weapon fielded by the Israelis out in the open using tech that we haven't even integrated into our own stuff. That's how that's going to work.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that it came down this way because, you know, what the Israelis did with the F-35, fielding the F-35I, from what I've heard in my circles, is that it's head and shoulders above the American version. So, you know, we could have come up with a plan to say, hey, for certain programs, maybe we should look at once we have fielded our different products that may be on the same platform, we should look at what we did if there's room to do that and make a conscious effort to do that and protect what needs to be protected, et cetera. But that's not what this is.
That is not what that is. I mean, philosophically, what you just described is the mindset that we employ now.
Yeah.
Nothing stops us from saying, let's work on a joint project on this particular aircraft. You know, we have the aircraft, you have the aircraft, you've come up with some modifications. Let's come up with a project tightly compartmented and controlled and work on this together. It's that same thought process that goes into clearing a memo to pass to a liaison intelligence service. You stop, reflect, decide, what are we going to give them in military terms? What are the left and right limits here? And then we proceed. But that is not what this is. This is giving away the farm. That's what this is.
Yeah, it's my understanding it's an attempt to replace the 10-year memorandum of understanding that's signed between the two countries that involves billions and billions of dollars, yes. American dollars, going to the Israelis.
Yes.
I think I reported on this last month that Netanyahu had actually told his guys, you need to figure out a way to do this without this memorandum and this money. Does that explain why Netanyahu actually wrote Section 224?
It's a land grab.
To replace that?
It's a land grab. He's feeling frisky. He feels like it. I'm not accusing the Israelis of being the only reason we are at war with Iran.
Right.
I think it's a more complicated picture than that.
I do too.
But he certainly feels like he wanted that and he got it. And so let's go for broke now, guys. Let's see if we can't completely change the rules of the game with the Americans.
That's amazing. That's gutsy.
It is gutsy. Yeah. Well, I think the Yiddish term is chutzpah is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's
yes. Yeah. How does that square with the Israelis wanting to be independent, though? Because, I mean, you and I agree, we think they should be able to do what they need to do. They're in a bad neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody hates them.
Well, look,
they're just
figuring they can take advantage of us, and they're going to try to take advantage of this. I mean, my experience in working with the Israelis was always, if I'm working operationally with the Israelis on something, and the guy doesn't know me and we don't have a history, the first couple of steps in that relationship are going to be, he's going to push me and shove me and try to get me to back down and give him things he has no right to have. He's going to test me to find out if I can be pushed around. And then once he determines that that's not how we're going to play this game, like we will cooperate and we will be allies, but I'm not here to be your boy, basically. Then in my experience, they settle down and knock that off and you settle into a good working relationship. But if the guy determines he can take advantage of you and you are going to let him push you around, then he will keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. In other words, they will go as far as you let them go.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the obvious answer to that? The obvious answer is set the limits, put your foot down. And say, you know, can we knock this crap off now? Can we get to work? I'm going to do what I got to do for my country. You're going to do the same. We're going to figure out where we can cooperate. And let's stop playing games trying to take advantage of each other. Let's get some work done now.
Yeah.
And again, once those rules are established, it's all good from that point on. But man, if they smell weakness,
mm-hmm.
you're toast. Then. They're going to keep coming back and coming back and coming back.
I wonder who the congressmen and senators were. I mean, Steve mentioned Tom Cotton. That wouldn't surprise me that went to push to get this stuff put into the bill.
I can tell you from personal experience, they are not shy. I had the experience, and I guess once when I was running the liaison relationship with the Israelis at headquarters, they showed up at the front gate for a meeting to come into the compound for a meeting. And they had a senior officer in the car who they had not listed as an attendee at the meeting.
Hmm.
And in other words, so we hadn't cleared them. They had no approval for this man to come to the gate. Keep in mind, the Israelis are at CIA headquarters sometimes multiple times every day. So they know the procedures to get onto the compound better than we know the procedures to get. This was not a mistake. This was they decided they wanted to bring somebody they didn't tell us about, and they figured they'd just buffalo their way through the gate. So the gate guy's talking to me on the phone, says, what do you want me to do? I said, call him a cab and send him back to the embassy because he's not on the list. And once we do that, they'll never do this again.
That's right.
Okay. 5 minutes later, the phone rang on my desk. It was the director of Central Intelligence himself, suffice it to say, who was not in the habit of calling Sam Faddis every day.
Right.
Not amused, and wanted this guy through the gate post-haste. So that's how long it took for them to place a call from the front gate of CIA headquarters to a congressman, and the congressman to call the director of Central Intelligence, and him to call Sam Faddis way down the the tree, and say, "Stop messing with them. Let them do what they want." That's how that works on something as minor as getting a guy through a gate who didn't even need to be in the meeting. They were making a point. We'll do whatever the hell we want. That's what they were saying.
Yep, and they've got enough congressional people behind them, elected people behind them to make the push more often than not. We got to take another break, Sam. When we come back, we'll play a little clip about the president. And I think Netanyahu's may have underestimated President Trump this time because he seems a little pissed off. We'll be right back with Sam Faddis.
Introducing Worldview Tube Vault. Over 35 years of radio broadcasts, television programs, documentaries, and ebooks. Plus, Worldviewpedia, our powerful search engine for instant worldview and Bible research. Join for as little as $7.99 a month. And now, Vault members get something brand new, courses. Our very first course is here, The Book of Revelation with Brannon House. 53 in-depth lessons, complete with overview quizzes, walking you verse by verse through one of the most important books in Scripture. Getting started is simple. Go to worldviewtube.com/vault and join today. Already a member? Visit worldviewtube.com, click the person icon in the top right, and log in. Then hover over Vault in the menu and select Courses. That's it. You're in. Join WorldviewTube Vault today at worldviewtube.com/vault.
And now this, and he is holding consultations with his security team, I am told, by a senior U.S. official. And I asked the president about the Israeli strike on Hezbollah in Beirut earlier today. He told me that was not coordinated with the United States and that he is not happy about it. The region is now waiting to see if the Israelis will respond to these waves of ballistic missiles that targeted their northern cities, including the third largest Israeli city of Haifa. But what we saw earlier today, an effort by the Israeli air defense systems to shoot down the incoming fire. Tonight, we can report that Iran's foreign minister is speaking with regional counterparts about the situation right now. And the IDF spokesperson released a TV statement earlier today indicating that schools across Israel tomorrow will be closed. He said Iran is trying to create a new equation when it conducts direct fire on our territory. In response, the IDF will attack in relation to the current security protocol. And so, again, this is a political decision ultimately that will be made by Israel in terms of whether or not there will be a response. But the latest information that we have, 4 waves of Iranian ballistic missiles targeted Israel tonight in response to the IDF strikes on Hezbollah in southern Beirut earlier today. President Trump telling Fox News that he has a message for Iran. He says, "You've shot your missiles. That's enough. Get back to the table and make a deal."
Rob Maynard Show. It's More War Monday, and my guest is retired CIA officer Sam Faddis, and publisher of AND Magazine. If you're not following and subscribing to AND Magazine on Substack, you ought to do it, folks. You're missing out on the best information that's out there, not just about intelligence, but across the board. It's all very well researched, analyzed, and then put out in a way that everybody can understand it. And Sam, you know, let's move the discussion over to the current situation and everything a little bit in the context of this 224 thing. I think that clip there was a little bit behind because it's my understanding the Israelis did respond to the Iranian ballistic missiles in a limited way. But I didn't see anything from President Trump yelling at him about it. So I'm guessing that he would have probably been told about that one.
Well, I think it's clear that the president is not happy. Yes, to my understanding, we've had an exchange back and forth between the Israelis and the Iranians. The Houthis, allegedly, their Iranian allies down in Yemen, chipped in, fired at Israel. And as of this moment, as you and I are talking, I think they are temporarily not shooting at each other. But my sense is we are nowhere close to having meaningful movement to an actual peace treaty or what, an end to this. So we'll have volleys of fire and then maybe they'll stop shooting for a day or two or whatever. It's more like an intermission. It's not the end of anything. I know President Trump, for obvious reasons, wants to talk this thing down, negotiate an end. Everybody else wants to see that as well. On our side, certainly wants to see that. I'm not convinced we're even close to that at this point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the table that was set before Epic Fury, it appears that we're very close to being back at that status quo. Now, the Iranians did not fire on any American bases, I don't think, from what I understand. But one of the concerns I have is the whole thing that started this off was the Israelis attacked Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. Well, Hezbollah hasn't agreed to any ceasefire, have they? No. I mean, why is that explain to folks why that's an issue for us.
Well, because unfortunately, we got dragged into this thing, joined at the hip with the Israelis in this war. Iranians, I mean, part of the issue, there are certainly many issues here. One of the issues I've raised from the beginning is, okay, the Israelis are allies, as we've been talking about. That doesn't mean we're blood brothers and we're inseparable and we see everything exactly the same way. They have interests that we don't necessarily share. And they have goals that we don't necessarily share. So the way I always put it is, you know, Trump wants a happy ending. And I'm not trying to be silly. I just mean he wants some sort of, ideally he'd like to have a regime change in Tehran. But he wants a deal in which everybody agrees to acceptable terms. The Iranian people live better. The region is more peaceful. That's what I mean. I'm not not being facetious. He wants that kind of thing. I don't think the Israelis care. I mean, would they balk at that necessarily? No. But if in the end all this is about continued bloodletting, killing Hezbollah guys, beating up the Iranians, destroying capability, even if it doesn't clearly resolve and it's just kind of an ongoing thing, I'm not sure that's a bad result from Netanyahu's perspective. He's like, we're beating up on the Iranians, we're beating up on Hezbollah, and we got the Americans helping us do it. And if it turns into a wonderful peace treaty in 30 days we can live with, that's cool. If we just kind of keep grinding on these guys, what the Israelis call mowing the lawn for kind of ever, you know, I'm not sure Netanyahu regards that as a bad thing. So Trump, obviously very frustrated. I certainly don't blame him for that, with Netanyahu not getting on board with participation in finding a final resolution. But I don't think, not sure to what extent Netanyahu cares. Like, he'd be fine with just bombing Hezbollah forever, honestly.
Yeah, that brings to my mind, listening to you talk about that there, the Abraham Accords and the other Arab states in the region. Do you think Israel cares about those arrangements and what those countries are doing? Because Epic Fury kind of has changed the landscape a little bit, especially for the Gulf Arab states.
You know, I mean, I think the Israelis are going to do whatever at any one point in time the calculus says is best for them, period, full stop. I mean, and now they got to juggle a lot of considerations. To what extent are they prepared to really torque us off in a way that will damage their strategic relationship? Okay, but all of those things are calculus, and in the end, the answer, the real question is, what's best for us right here in Israel? Not what's best for America, the region, the people, other people in the Abraham Accord. And as I said earlier, I don't blame them for that. They live in a bad neighborhood. They're a really small country. They're surrounded by enemies. They're taking care of themselves. I'm not upset with them for that. I'm upset with us because we don't just recognize that and deal with them the same way, which is, you know, that. And now, of course, we're in the midst of this conflict and we're trying to find a way to land this plane. Makes it even more complicated. We can't hit the rewind button and go back and change our minds about starting it. So
it certainly is a good window to hold up and say Section 224 needs to be eliminated in our NDAA. If you want another reason, this is the primary reason right here. It's the reality, right? And it's not I'm not being pejorative. It's like you. I mean, I want them to do what's necessary to defend their people. And those kind of things. But it's just points that out. It puts a fine point on it.
Well,
we've got a question.
Not at our expense. And look, the way I always thought about this in dealing with the Israelis was, you know, when we find one of these situations where we find they've recruited a spy and they're stealing our secrets, or they're doing other things that we still can't talk about, that, you know, somebody ought to hit a pause button on the delivery of all military aid to the state of Israel. I'm not talking about cutting them off, leaving them hanging, letting them be destroyed. I'm just all of a sudden just press a button. And all those planes that were supposed to be landing today in Tel Aviv don't land. Mm-hmm. And all those things that were supposed to be shipped out of some weapons depot in the United States don't ship today. And just give them about 48 hours to let that ripple through their system. Again, I'm not talking about cutting them loose and abandoning them.
Right.
Just a reminder who the big dog is in this relationship and whose national survival is dependent upon the United States of America. So you stop pushing us. Stop taking us for stop taking advantage of us. Like taking us for granted, just that, you know, that would ripple up to the prime minister's office in Israel in about 15 minutes that this was happening.
Almost as fast as the senior officer from the gate at the CIA to the director.
Almost as fast. It would be it would be kind of our method of responding in kind, saying, okay, guys, all that ammo, all those missiles, everything else that you were already planning on didn't arrive today, did it? Now, it'll be there in a couple of days, but it could have stayed turned off if we wanted. So get back in your lane.
That's why strength is important. We got a question from the audience. Let's go ahead and take that before we get to this break. Go ahead, Shell.
We have Nathan, sir.
Good afternoon, Colonel, Sam, everyone. And Shell. It's interesting, you know, mentioning about the cutting off, and Jonathan Pollard has actually spoken about this. The last time we attempted an arms embargo, they actually threatened us to the 224. My concern is, you know, we have Washington, who's already sending tons of money to Ukraine, but that's where our taxes are supposed to be appropriated, and what this does is it shifts it to the Pentagon, where they've never passed an audit, and it's going to have free reign of our tax dollars to do whatever they want with zero accountability.
Yeah, I agree.
I share all of those concerns, and that, I mean, right now we have never demonstrated the backbone to stand up and push back on this. And again, I'm not their allies. I'm not talking about cutting them loose and abandoning them and leaving them to their fate. Just saying, okay, just knock it off, guys. Stop pushing us. Stop picking my pocket. Just let's set some rules to this relationship and let's actually live by them.
Yeah.
And I think if we did that for once, what you'd find is they would, because they are rational people. But on the other hand, if they keep pick in your pocket and you never push back on anything, well, why the heck would they stop? Like,
oh, yeah. That's an incentivizer.
Yeah.
Keep on going.
I got
man.
Away with it. Let me get away with it again.
Let's go for more. They didn't say no last time.
That's right.
All right. Well, we got to take one more break and we'll come back. I want to talk about nukes, Iran.
Okay.
Sam, I know I've heard you talk about it. I've talked about it. I think the American people need to know what the heck's going on. We'll be right back with Sam Pettis.
News is moving faster than ever, and so are we. Worldview Tube brings you 24/7 live stream coverage and now real-time alerts when it matters most. Once you have the Worldview Tube app installed, exit the app and navigate your way to settings. In settings, locate the tab labeled Notifications. Select the Notifications tab. Scroll down until you locate the Worldview Tube app icon. Select the tab, and here you can turn on and customize your notification experience for the Worldview Tube app. News doesn't wait, and neither should you. Turn on push notifications to stay informed. Every headline as it happens.
President, Iran was the closest to developing weapons-grade uranium after you ripped up the nuclear deal because there were no guardrails in place.
They were developing it during the nuclear deal. You don't know that? Iran, when Obama signed that stupid deal where he paid them billions and billions of dollars, he thought he could bribe them. Listen to me. They were developing a nuclear weapon. That's how they got there. They got all of this uranium during Obama. You know that, don't you? Well, that's how they got there. Don't say this. They got there. They developed it during the Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, during his administration.
And they've escalated their development after the deal was wrapped up.
They didn't escalate anything.
Let's talk about the economy.
Let me just tell you something. If I didn't go in there with the B-2 bombers, they would right now have a nuclear weapon, and it could be that half of the world would be eradicated.
Let me ask you about the economy.
Welcome back to the Rob Maida Show. It's More War Monday, and we're talking about the situation in the Middle East. This situation, the part about the nuclear weapons, is the most, that is the vital national interest piece for the United States. In addition to ending this 47-year war that Iran declared on us in 1979, them not having access to a nuclear weapon in any way whatsoever, that's the vital national interest of the United States, because they will hit us with it. In addition, they'll hit our friends. They'll hit their friends with it. Look what they've done with their missiles. They're routinely firing on their friends. And my guest today is CIA officer, retired Sam Pettis. And Sam, I've heard you talk about your thoughts on the status of the Iranian nuclear program. I'm going to be clear. I've been clear about this for a year or so now that based on what I observe with the nuclear or the North Koreans' nuclear warhead development, I still believe that the Iranians have one or more devices. They just hadn't had the ability yet to mate it with a delivery system that they could reliably deliver it. And that's where we were at the Midnight Hammer, at the beginning of Midnight Hammer. That's what I believe, just by my close observation inside the walls of the North Korea development program. I mean, how far along do you think they really are, though, from your perspective? You've seen this a lot. This is your territory.
Yeah, I mean, I worked against the Iranians a lot, and I worked specifically against their nuclear weapons program a lot. And by that, I mean, as in recruiting sources inside that program, not just reading about it. I mean, look, you know, I'm tempted to say we don't know is the short answer to your question, which ought to terrify everybody. I mean,
yeah.
First, I mean, what do we know? The Iranians have a nuclear weapons program, and they've had one for a long time. And all of their other nonsensical crap that they spew about running thousands of centrifuges to create highly enriched uranium because somehow it has to do with a power plant or medical isotopes, anybody who knows anything at all about nuclear weapons and this whole area knows That doesn't make any sense. In fact, what you're doing is, first of all, you don't use uranium for medical isotopes. Let's start with that. Just because it's radioactive doesn't make it all the same. And you can't enrich it to the level you're enriching it and then use it in a reactor.
Right.
So we could go on about that forever, but the bottom line is there's only one reason for you to be doing all of this, in addition to all the other work we know about that has to do with actually the engineering of a bomb. All of this adds up to only one thing. You guys are trying to build a bomb, and you have been for a really long time, actually, obviously, more than one. So that's a given, and they've never been honest about any agreement they've ever entered into. They've always played games. They've always hidden sites. They've always lied, so you can't trust them. So you know they want nukes, and you know they're going to lie to you, and they know you know they won't abide by any agreement. Why I say we don't know? Because most of the time our intel is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have... CIA doesn't want to admit this. There's the bottom line. They don't have the sources on the ground inside Iran right now to tell you down to that level of granularity. Are they actually assembling a device? And if so, precisely where? So we're left in this very uneasy place, right, where it's kind of in the murk and you don't know.
Right.
What makes it worse? The North Korean angle? There's a tight connection between the North Koreans and the Iranians. The North Koreans have helped them on a lot of things. There's no reason to say we know for sure the North Koreans haven't or won't just hand them a functioning device.
Yeah.
Which they could just stick on a plane and fly in any day, fully functioning. And in a matter of minutes, they would go from no nukes to having one. And we don't begin to have the capacity to know that. You add all of that up, you ought to really, really, really be worried about where they stand. The Chinese, back when they went nuclear, in the sense of having developed, actually assembled functioning nuclear devices, from the time they got on hand the HEU, the highly enriched uranium, in its final form, it has to be made into a metal anyway, from the time they got that, it took them something like 72 hours to assemble the device. So, I mean, that's the blink of an eye in intelligence. We know to a certainty that the Iranians are not just enriching uranium, and then once they have enough stuff to make it go boom, then they'll start figuring out how to build the device that it goes in. We know at the whole same time they've been enriching uranium, they have also been working all the technical engineering details, which means from the time they have that HEU, all they have to do is take it and physically place it into an already constructed device, and you will go from no nuke to a functioning nuclear weapon in a heartbeat. All of that's real. We know all of that. And we don't know for sure that they haven't already done that.
Exactly.
We don't know that.
And that should terrify everybody.
Yes.
It really should. I mean, that's the issue. You know, the president, I read that he said that when he was talking about the deal, for the first time, he said something about confirming that, hey, we've got them to say we're not going to pursue nuclear weapons, developing them. But I want to close the loophole so they don't buy one. You know, they have to say they're not going to buy one either, ever, in any way whatsoever, and everything. But how do we? I'm like you. I know how devious and liars and you cannot trust these people that are running this country. I mean, it's from foundational. It's genetic, I think, in their DNA, their ideology, and their belief system, and all that. So how does the president think that he's going to be able to, if he gets them to agree to this stuff, how's he going to enforce this agreement?
Really good question. I mean, I presume he's making that representation in good faith and believes that we're capable of doing it.
Yeah.
Given the current status of the intelligence community, which is not good, I don't think we begin to have the capacity to enforce that. If you're talking about a functioning nuclear weapon coming from North Korea, they already developed it, built it, it's sitting there. Putting that thing on a cargo plane, you're not talking about a ship. You're not talking about even a cargo plane full of cargo. I mean, functioning nuclear weapons that we put on cruise missiles, you can put in the trunk of a compact car. Okay, so that's what you're trying to stop. Maybe something not quite that small, it's North Korean. But still, you're not talking about shiploads or even plane loads of of cargo. And we were talking before about a delivery system. Okay, you got a nuke. You could blow it up in the desert. That's great. But you need to get it to where your enemy is. Well, the Iranians have a really, really advanced surface-to-surface missile program that they've built over the course of years. They are bright boys and girls.
Yes, they are.
I find it impossible to believe that they would be building a nuclear weapon and not have already managed to get out their tape measure and figure out that the weapon that they're building, obviously I'm being a little facetious, but the point is they thought about the fact that if we're going to build all these missiles, probably at least one of them ought to be designed from Jump Street to carry the nuke that we are also building. I don't think they're going to build a nuclear warhead and then start thinking, now what should we, how do we get this to Tel Aviv? I think they already built the missiles with the nose cones, with the specs, with the dimensions and everything else you need. So when they're all done with the nuke, effectively they're bolting it in. And in fact, years ago now, and this is all stuff that's been in the press, we determined that they were building, working on a fusing system for their missile. Right, so you got a missile that's got explosive in the warhead. How, what makes it go boom? Does it blow up when it hits the ground? Does it blow up in the air? Right, this is standard stuff. It's true for a conventional munition, true for anything. Well, they were working on a fusing mechanism. The fusing, in this case, the fusing mechanism, the thing that would make it go boom, was based on barometric pressure. When it goes up, it sets, and then when it comes down and gets to a certain altitude, it goes off. They had, I'm sure coincidentally, selected the altitude as precisely the same altitude at which we detonated our weapon over Nagasaki. Which is the optimal altitude for a certain size warhead for the fireball to have the greatest. When you get into the world of WMD, it's all a bunch of sick, very mechanical stuff. But the point is, I don't think that's a coincidence that they had come up with a fuse that would detonate this warhead at exactly that altitude. A conventional munition detonated at that altitude would have very little impact. It would be a big firework. The only thing you would want to blow up at that altitude would be a nuclear weapon of a certain size. And that was true at least a decade ago that they were working on that.
Leaves a lot of questions, man. Well, you've mentioned the our weakness in our intelligence information a couple of times. My friend Bill Pulte, who I've worked with on veterans advocacy stuff, where I've seen him give cars away to homeless veterans so they could go get a job, he's now been made the acting DNI. Do you see some resolution to some weak spots coming? A lot of people are upset about that.
I don't know. I mean, I would put it to you this way, right? As a retired military officer, right? Haven't been in the Army myself. My dad being a naval officer. You're talking to CIA, an organization that's pretty close to combat ineffective in military terms. Yeah. What do you do when you have an outfit that's in that position? You come in with a baseball bat. You fire the commanding officer, a number of other senior people, and you're not gentle. You come in and we're going back to basics and we're going to make some major, major changes here. That's how you fix, I don't care if it's infantry battalion or CIA, that's how you fix that. That's what it's going to take. And so far, of course, that hasn't happened anywhere in the IC.
Absolutely not. It has not. We've seen it in the nuclear world. I got to do it once myself in a nuclear unit. It has remarkable sound, good effects. The
mission. It certainly does.
We do. Well, Sam, thank you very much for joining us today. We've covered a lot of ground, but I think it's important that America hears from folks like you, man. And I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, you can find Sam at Onyx at Real Sam Faddis, but go to the Substack and AND magazine. It sounds innocuous, but I'm telling you, you want to subscribe to that. It's the best information out there anywhere, hands down. And I'll see you tomorrow. What is today? Oh, it's Training Tuesday tomorrow on Worldview Tube.
What if millions around the world could access Bible teaching and worldview training for free right now without hitting a paywall? That's exactly what happens every day at worldviewtube.com because of the Worldview Weekend Foundation. We don't lock our live stream behind PayPal. We don't restrict our content to members only.